Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 21. Dave, I guess the first thing we say coming out of that game is the Steelers went on the road to Indianapolis and got a win. If you had said that in July, that they'd come out of that game with a win in Indianapolis, everybody be happy, not really concerned about how things looked. The reality is a lot different on Monday morning, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. When there's so many factors involved, the way this thing looked originally when the schedule was going to be released, you thought, okay, Manning and Wayne and Freeney and Mathis and all these guys against the Steelers, this ought to be a pretty good game. And if the Steelers can come out of it with a win, oh boy, you know. But we know that the players of the play were not the ones advertised on the show bill, you know, as they would say. So I don't know. They got out of there with a win. And as Tomlin likes to say, you know, he likes to think style points don't matter, but there certainly weren't many style points last night.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, we came out of the first two games and you say there's not a lot to talk about. They got their ass handed to them by the Ravens and then totally dominated the Seahawks. There's a lot to talk about coming out of this game. So let's get right to it. First, what's the latest on the injuries? We had a bunch of offensive linemen go down. What's the latest you've heard?
Yeah, and boy, if Gilbert couldn't have come back in that game, we would have been using a tight end at a tackle spot with David Johnson. But looks like Marcus Gilbert, you know, possibly shoulder, arm type thing. Supposedly he's going to be fine according to his Twitter feed and to other reports by Scott Brown and all. Doug Legursky, same thing. I thought I'd heard a report where it was separated shoulder, but there was no confirmation on that. And supposedly he's going to be fine too. Jonathan Scott, late in the game, looks like a high ankle sprain. It looks like the initial report. Tomlin claimed he didn't know, you know, much about the injury last night in the press conference. The way the reports are, I think supposedly he had ice on it on crutches after the game.
Yeah, he was in a walking boot, I think.
Yeah, he would be. You would think that there's no way he's going to play against Houston. And I think the only other noted injury, of course, we could find out more Tuesday with Tomlin, was Arnez Battle with a hamstring injury. And, you know, if that's any significance, well, that's a special teams captain down right there. But that's all that was really reported up to this point, and we'll find out more from Tomlin on Tuesday.
Yep. Let's first, before we get into the game, talk about who dressed, who didn't dress. I guess the handwriting was on the wall for Bryant McFadden when it was said he wasn't going to be a starter and they were going to keep the rotation as it was. Didn't make a lot of sense to dress him. I'm surprised, but I understand the logic behind it. And then Jericho Cotchery, it'll be interesting to see his role and how it develops over the course of the season, because the Steelers certainly have four very capable wide receivers. We've talked about Arnez Battle's role as captain of the special teams. This may open up something for him, but he's another guy who didn't get a hat last night.
Yeah, I think what you saw, you know, neither of those two had showed up on the injury report all last week. Now, they're termed healthy scratches because they weren't on the injury report. Now, they supposedly practice fully. You know, they could get in trouble if those guys didn't practice fully and were not on the injury report and then scratch. But I think what you saw here is, hey, let's give these guys a couple of weeks, you know, with their hamstrings, real delicate, especially McFadden. And LeBeau pretty much said this the other day when they interviewed him on, I believe it was Thursday, saying he was going to be down mostly to his health status, which means to believe, you know, hey, let's get this guy healthy. You bring a good point. If Battle's down this week, this could open up a shot for Cotchery to get in there. He has played special teams in the past as well. So you might lose a little something as far as Battle being, you know, gunner type and all like that. But, you know, it sure couldn't hurt to have a guy that you know you could throw in on the field that's definitely an upgrade over Battle as far as receivers go.
Yep, I generally agree with all of that stuff. The other scratches weren't a surprise at all. Chris Carter's yet to get a helmet. I guess
he got a helmet last night.
Chris Scott did not dress, right?
Is that right. He didn't dress. He dressed, I believe, I think he dressed the week before when chemo was down, didn't he?
Yep, I think that's right. And I guess the interesting thing that I will look for this week is whether the Steelers dress 8 offensive linemen. If I were filling out the 45-man on Sundays, I would have another offensive lineman dressed. And we've seen it a couple times in the past year and a half where the Steelers have guys go down and they really start to get thin fast when you only dress 7 guys. With both Gilbert and Ligurski dinged up last night, but probably available, I still don't. I'm not sure I understand the usefulness of dressing an extra special teams guy versus having an extra offensive lineman available.
Yeah, it's just something that they've always done, just dressing 7. I guess it depends on how injured these guys are going forward, to whether or not he's going to dress, maybe 8 instead. It's just not in his nature to do. We'll see if that changes, this week. And I think it's going to depend on a lot on the injury report and if they sign anybody else to come in, another offensive lineman. It would probably be a tackle, one would think.
Yep. If somebody, Dave, why don't you give me, if you were going to recap the game in 3 or 4 sentences, what's your takeaway from what happened last night?
Well, offensive line, man. Couldn't run the ball, couldn't pass protect. Jonathan Scott was a huge liability on that left side, couldn't do anything right. Dwight Freeney pretty much, made his presence felt in that game. Offensively, I thought they were able to move the ball at times through the air. There were some drop passes and all, but I'm not going to pin this one on the defense at all. I thought the defense played pretty good as a whole, and we'll break that down here in a little bit, but definitely offensive woes, and I think you can trace most of them back to the offensive line.
Yeah, my take would be I thought Ben was very good, particularly early. The running game, non-existent, again, right down to the offensive line. I thought the defensive line got pushed around much more than I'd like to see. I think you got to raise some questions now, but they've been run on effectively by both the Ravens and the Colts. I didn't think Aaron Smith was particularly good at the point of attack as the Colts were running right a lot. Secondary, the Colts missed some open receivers, but I will say I thought Troy had his best, most influential, dynamic game that I've seen since the beginning of last year. He was flying around, just missed making a couple big plays at the very end of the game after scoring the touchdown. So I think that's a huge positive to take out of it.
Yeah, the run defense, and we talked about this before we got on the air here. I saw a lot more cut blocking yesterday, legal cut blocking from the best I can see, according to the rules and all like that. But, it seemed like guys were starting to, especially Casey Hampton, starting to get irritated by it and worried more about getting cut than he was holding the point of attack. And there was a few times where you saw him just washed out. If you're looking at the offense, it plays to the left where they just washing them out to the left and look like, it's starting to affect him. I think it's in his head a little bit, and teams know this, and they'll continue to do it, especially a good, blocking team like the Texans coming up. Boy, these guys have really got, their technique down as far as run blocking goes, and it's something probably to be concerned about because, what did the Colts rush for last night, 90-something yards?
Yeah, 90 – I'll give you the exact number. I think it was something like 97 or.
Yeah, 97. 86 came from Joseph Addai on 17 carries, had a 5.1 yards per carry there. Overall it was bend and don't break. The defense was set up in some precarious situations due to some turnovers and held. Let's face it, they only gave up really, one touchdown, for the most part there. But it's something to worry about. I thought the pass coverage was good, as the stats bear that out. Of course, let's face it, you're going against Kerry Collins and Curtis Painter there. They got okay pressure on the night, not great. Lamar Woodley, boy, he sure has been quiet through 3 games. I was expecting
really quiet.
Yeah, I was expecting a couple sacks, a big night by him going by. Ryan Dean was out at right guard. They have young linemen on that line outside of really the center, Jeff Saturday. So, yeah, there are some concerns, but, I thought overall the defense played well. It's the offense and the offensive line that I'm really worried about at this point.
Well, let's get right into the game itself. First drive, love the opening play call. Found Wallace for a 19-yard gain out of a little play-action play. Able to move the ball down the field. And then Manny Sanders just dropped a perfect throw from Ben right over about the 10-yard line that he may have taken in for a score. Who knows? But big drop there. And the Steelers go on the board 3-0. Anything jumped out at you on that opening drive?
Yeah, that was a start to a not-so-great night for Sanders, missing that there. Because, you know, anytime you come away with 3 instead of 7, and like you said, who knows if he would have went in, but he had been right there at the 1 or 2 yard line at least. And, you know, we would have got a crack at least see how our short yardage, you know, stuff had picked up, but that was for naught. I thought it was a good drive overall. You know, they mostly went pass on that drive. I had a feeling Arians would try to jump on them quick to try to settle down the crowd. But yeah, once again, a little disconcerting. You come away with 3 instead of 7.
And then, you know, the whole first quarter, the Steelers moved the ball very well in the first quarter. Their second, you know, Indy went, they got a first down on their opening drive as well, but and came out no huddle, but didn't move the ball much at all. And then the Steelers moved the ball again into Indy territory, but a couple incompletions, a little miscommunication maybe with Wallace on one of the plays. And then Indy goes, Steelers get the ball back in their third drive. And the third drive, it was pretty funny because if you listen to the feed from who, I guess it's ABC, who had the game? NBC?
NBC, yeah.
NBC, if you listen to the feed, they were really doing their Mike Wallace praise piece, talking about how many 100-yard games he had, but the whole thing about how good Wallace has been of late, and basically on cue, one of the prettiest pass plays we've seen in a long time, Wallace streaking from the left side. Ben hits him on the right hash in stride for an 81-yard touchdown. It's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, and that's a great shot they have kind of looking over, Roethlisberger close up of him looking over, giving him the high sign there. You know, they saw something there. And, yeah, this guy will just run away from you. If you can get them safeties and get those cornerbacks to, you know, play up a little bit. And I thought there was a rub-off maybe on that play, but going back and look at it, I don't think it was. I think that's just that oh shit speed, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, the closest guy to him was a linebacker trailing him there. And, you know, that's a mismatch. But, yeah, you got to be feeling real good at that point because you're up, you know, 10-0, and things are looking good, you know, at that point outside of not being able to run the ball effectively.
Yeah, at this point you're thinking, you know, again, we're thinking 31-7 looks good. Steelers are going to put up points at will, able to move the ball, and Indy can't do it. I'll tell you one thing. Chris Collinsworth, I think, is a very good analyst, and he made a good point on that touchdown pass. They had a little bit of an underneath route there from the right side coming across, and Ben gave it just a little bit of a shoulder fake to hold the back, what ended up being the front end side safety. And it was a great point by Collinsworth because he said the back safety, the one coming from the left side, from Wallace's side, isn't going to be able to keep up with him. So if he can keep the front safety frozen and Wallace gets past him, then the play is going to hit. And Ben gave him that little shoulder fake and then, you know, aired it out. And he did air it out. And Wallace, a little bit of a fingertip catch and, you know, tucked it away and at that point, nobody's catching them.
Yeah, and, you know, they were injured in their secondary, too. They had Caldwell starting for Bullitt there. Powers played on the right corner, which I believe he normally does. Lacey, you know, he's had problems throughout his start of the year and mostly for his career. So, and this was a banged-up defense outside of their defensive line because Gary Brackett was out at middle linebacker. Pat Anger, you know, good, talented kid, was replacing him in the middle. But, yeah, you know, they just saw something they liked. They got the safety to bite, and off to the races he went, 10-0.
And you know, basically that's it. So the first quarter ends, and the rest of the game is a completely different game. The Colts able to sustain a couple drives by running the ball. As we talked about, you know, a guy didn't rush for 100 yards, but if he's getting 5 yards a carry, that's a problem. And the real problem there is it's not like he was ripping off two long runs and was stuffed otherwise. His longest run of the game was 11 yards. So, I mean, he was getting 4, 5, 6 yards every time he touched the ball. And then we saw the two beasts that they have. And you know, Dwight Freeney is a great player. Mathis and Freeney are, you know, they're both all pro caliber players. And Freeney is a guy who will be in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year this year and every year. He's too much for most guys to handle, and he's way too much for Jonathan Scott to handle.
Oh yeah, he just owned Jonathan Scott on the night, and you know it's not like we didn't see this coming. They tried to give him as much help as they could over there, but it just was not enough. You know, on that sack fumble, that first one. Well, wait a minute, that first one though was on Gilbert ran his guy all the way around the end. I thought he did good. Now, of course, he probably could have stayed on his block. But
yep.
Ben probably got some cold feet. You know, he's looking behind him trying to wonder, you know, where Mathis is at on that play.
Yep.
I thought Gilbert's probably going to be charged for that sack, although I guess you could pin that on Roethlisberger there. But, you know, not overly bad. But, you know, there we go again. Another fumble by Roethlisberger sets him up in good position there. And the bad thing about it is they I don't know if there's a complaint that Ben holds, you know, coming back again, that he holds the ball too long in the pocket. But let's face it, man, this guy is notorious of making the plays by doing it. You can't get on him for that. Now, perhaps on this one play, his pocket presence where it wasn't where it should have been, you know, probably a lack of trust of a rookie, you know, on that right side there. But, you know, it's hard to pin that on Gilbert, but it is what it is. You set them up right there at midfield.
Yeah, it was Ben, usually when he moves like that, when he looks around, he has a better sense of what's behind him. A little bit unlucky. Also a little bit unlucky how Mathis came in. He just happened to get his hand on the ball. But a good play by them and a good recovery by them to get the ball. Like you said, Gilbert did the right thing on that play. Hard to put too much blame on him. And then things started to change a little bit. The Colts move the ball down all the way to the Steeler 3. They do some nice stuff, short passes and Adai running the ball. A good job by and early on here, I think Ike Taylor did a very nice job, particularly in the first half, of shutting down Wayne and whoever else he was on. And you know, kept him out of the end zone. But Indy did drive the ball down there and scored to make it 10-3. And looks like, you know, the Steelers are going to get the ball back, and that's how maybe we go into the half. And lo and behold, the Steelers move the ball into Indy territory, and Freeney does his little thing, and away they go with Anderson scoring the touchdown. The thing that I crazy tackling by the offensive lineman there. I was like, okay, well, they're going to get the ball at midfield. Next thing you know, he's in the end zone.
Yeah, it looked like Jonathan Scott was just bought a ticket to the show there on that that one, because you know, the ball's laying on the ground and he's not even looked to be making an effort for it either. I don't know if he just so shell-shocked the way he was just beat. I believe that was a spin move on the inside, if memory serves me on that play. I have to go back and watch that sack again. But yeah, I mean, just like that, here you go again, another sack fumble. This time they return it, you know, 47 yards, and here we go, tie ball game. You're starting to think to yourself, oh Lord, we can't run block, and now the pass blocking is just failing, especially on that left side there. You're thinking, oh boy, we're in for a game here.
Yep, and it was, and Indy took the opening kickoff, got a couple first downs, end up punting. Steelers get the ball back again, and you know they drive the ball down the field. Ben did a nice job of using all his receivers. I think obviously Wallace wasn't as visible. He got three catches in the first quarter, I think, for 120 yards, and finished with only five catches, I think, on the day. So he wasn't as big a part, but Antonio Brown made some nice catches. He went to Hines Ward a few times. Heath Miller made some good catches, particularly in the second half. So the ball being distributed around, they drive down, and then all of a sudden he hits Wes Saunders in the face mask or the shoulder pad. That ball bounces up. You're thinking, oh, my goodness, here's another pick. But Saunders did a good job of just getting the ball back, and Sushi misses the 36-yarder.
Yeah, one thing we're missing here, though, is right after they got that sack fumble, you know, the Steelers' first play getting the kickoff back right at, you know, before the end of the half there. Was that sack fumble? I mean, was that an interception that he threw? And at first, I thought Sanders might have quit on the route, but when you go back and look at it, Ben just sailed it high on him, and that was intercepted by Joe LaFedge. And the bad thing about it is Sanders just leaps right on over him and doesn't touch him down. And then, you know, he gets a big return back on that, and then a subsequent low block on the play, you know, by Antonio Brown sets him up right there at the Steelers 25, and at least the defense held him to a field goal. But, yeah, 13-10 going into the half. And as you say, The Colts come out again, pretty much no huddle with Collins again. They end up punting, and the Steelers look like they were trying to move the ball again, and then Sushi, misses that 36-yard field goal, and then you're really thinking, man, what's going on here if you weren't already?
Yeah, and you're right. I absolutely forgot that pass play by Roethlisberger. A bad throw sailed it way over. Manny Sanders, that kind of stuff's the inexcusable stuff. That's a mental mistake. We laugh all the time about Plex when he spiked the ball after he was down way back 10 years ago against the Jaguars without being touched, and they recovered the ball. Sanders, as they talked about on the television, he jumps to avoid contact. I don't know what he's thinking there. He's been in the league now. It's his second year in the league. He's got to know, and I'm sure that's going to come through in film study. Hopefully that never happens again. But, yeah, that was a three-point mistake by Manny Sanders, because they have the ball at midfield with, a minute 40 left. I'm thinking they probably, they're lucky to come away with points. But as you said, they take it down. Antonio Brown commits a bad penalty with the low block, and all of a sudden they're on the 25, and it's now there's 90% chance they come away with points, which they did. And after, dominating the first 20 minutes of the game, Steelers turn it over three times and go in down. And then they miss the opening field goal to start the second half. I don't know that it's time for anybody to panic at that point, but I'm certainly at that point wondering, when they're going to get things together. Fortunately, the defense gets a three and out. Steelers get the ball back. And on this drive, this is the drive that Sushi hits the 44-yarder. Ligurski gets hurt on the drive. There are a couple penalties. Ben makes things happen on this drive.
Yeah, he did. And they were forced into some short, quick passes primarily because of the shape of the offensive line. I think they took a deep shot at Sanders on that drive. But also, I think it was the second play of that drive that Jonathan Scott, was flagged for holding, on there as well. So, every time they seem like they take two steps forward, they take a step back and all. But, yeah, he moved them down the field on that. And Ligurski, during that drive, Ligurski went out injured. And you're thinking, oh, Lord, at that time I believe you have Gilbert out of the game. You have Trey Essex at right tackle. You have Ligurski out now, so you have to have Foster in the game. At least they got the game tied at that point, 13-13. But, fourth quarter, Colts are still in the game. The crowd was still in the game. You knew that anything could still happen at that point.
Yep, and anything and everything did happen from there. The big, at this point, Troy really seemed to get it going. He had the snap counts down. He had the formations down. He's impacting the game in a big way. And we talked about Woodley and Harrison. I mean, I thought Harrison had a good game. I thought the right side of the Steelers defense, from Hampton to Aaron Smith to Lamar Woodley, were non-existent. And the Colts basically, the left side of the Steelers defense, as the Colts basically were running over their own right side.
Yeah, I thought Harrison played a good game. There was a few times there, I think, where they shot off some runs over to the left there. Not very often. I'll break it down a little bit more when I do my offensive line report and go back through the game again. But yeah, I thought Harrison played good. He looks to be getting stronger. The sack fumble, of course, that we're getting to right now of his, he caused that, and Troy was there at the same time. They seemed to let Troy freelance quite a bit third and fourth quarter there, and he was always providing pressure on the quarterback. But I'm with you, man. With Woodley, this is three games in a row that you would have thought he would have had a more of an impact. Now, he has the one sack to his credit from the Ravens game, but, let's face it, that's a garbage sack and garbage time for the most part. He just it's not from a lack of scheme and understanding, and I'm pretty sure he's not hurt. It's just he's just getting dominated, for the most part, and he's being held out of pressure in the quarterback and stopping a run.
Yeah, and the big play here after the Steelers tie the game, Curtis Painter comes in at quarterback. Looked like maybe the Ferrier hit, which was a borderline kind of helmet shot. When he hit Kerry Collins,
he'll get a fine for that.
Yeah, he's pushing him with his hands and got some. Looks like he got some helmet into Collins' face mask. I don't know if he took another hit that would concuss him, but pretty interesting if that concussed him. Collins was up immediately and asking the ref for a flag there. The play, though, that Painter comes in and he's got Pierre Garçon. He turns Ike Taylor on a stop and go route up the right sideline, and Painter misses him, which would have been an easy 64-yard touchdown if he catches that ball.
Yeah, that's the one time where I think Ike was gambling there, got caught on a double move, thought he was going to jump that route. And you're right, boy, what a difference that one – it's funny how you can boil these things down to one or two plays sometimes. And that was a key – you know, I don't think Collins misses that throw. Even with him, you know for damn sure, well, Manning doesn't miss that throw. But yep. But Painter, yeah, he was beat. And he got a little bit of tumbling when he got back over that sideline. But, hey, you get some breaks in a game. You know, we forget that you know, these guys are paid to play too. And it was a great move. Ike bit on it. I think he saw something, had it dead to right there. And he thinks
the young quarterback's probably not throwing the ball down the field.
Exactly, that could be it too, and dodged a bullet for there for sure.
Yeah, that was a good call by the Colts on 3rd and 10. Didn't happen. They punt the ball, and you know, I think we've overlooked it a little bit, but Antonio Brown in the return game is massively dangerous. He took this one back 25 yards. He had another one I think he took back for 37 yards. Really, really good back there. He has just his development. You know, there was, I don't, one of the media guys commented that maybe Antonio Brown has passed Manny Sanders as the third receiver. I'm not sure it makes a ton of difference. The Steelers are going to have a lot of four wide receiver sets. These guys are both going to be on the field a lot. The question for me is when one of those guys surpasses Hines Ward as the number two receiver. Now, I don't know that at any point this season Mike Tomlin would not start Hines Ward, but Antonio Brown is just his development has been really fun to watch.
Yeah, this guy is taking his game seriously, and it started last offseason. And, of course, we know what happened during camp and preseason and all like that. As far as Hines, you know, they've been getting a few more snaps off this year thus far through three games. Sanders, boy, if he wouldn't have made those bonehead mistakes last night, you could make an argument for, hey, let's get him a little bit more playing time in there instead of Ward. But, hey, if you look back at the Seahawks game, though, the blocking that Hines Ward gives you when the ball's not in his hand, it's so hard to take that, you know, off the field. Now, I did think that Ward's blocking was a little suspect last night, as was everybody else's on the offensive line.
What'd you think of Heath Miller's blocking? I thought he got run over at the point.
Yeah, he wasn't there. That's a good point. He wasn't there either all the time. It just seemed like they were slow off the ball. They were always late getting to their spots, especially on some of the traps and all. And it didn't hurt that, you know, Mathis and Freeney are so quick and small and explosive off the ball. On top of it, they were just getting beat to spots. And you're right. I think the film's going to bear that out when I go back through and grade this offensive line, that Heath, who has had two solid games and only most reliable, probably tight end run blocker in the league, did not have his best night last night. And David Johnson either, for the most part. I thought some of the best blocks that they had were pulling Ligurski over to the left at times, seemed to break a few of the best runs there.
Yep. And so the Steelers go, they get the ball back after this 25-yard punt return by Brown up to the 35-yard line, and basically go 3 and out and punt the ball back to the Colts. And after a die goes for 7 yards on the first down, the Colts deep in their own territory, you know, a little play action, and James Harrison, we saw the play. It's just, and those are the guys, Harrison and Polamalu. Troy basically spent the whole fourth quarter in the backfield just missing, getting stuff. And as he said, James Harrison made a great play, and I had the front row seat, and one hop, and into the end zone he goes.
Yeah, even at that point there, you're thinking, okay, and I made a comment on Twitter at that point. I think I said, you know, let's hurry up and get behind the chicken wire and fire up the plane, and no showers for anybody. You just run for that plane real quick. But there was still plenty of football left to be played at 20-13 at that point.
And, you know, this stuff, this next drive by the Colts, if you're going to find things to get worked up about in a Steeler victory, hey, you probably get worked up about this. The 3rd and 3 pass in front of Keenan Lewis, they probably got a good spot for the Colts. Very close play to whether that was going to be a first down or not. And then Garçon again breaks open. And I've looked at this a couple times, and I didn't know if it was William Gay who had the coverage. Ike was on Colley, and Troy looked like he was running down the field after this. But Garçon breaks open for 27 yards. all of a sudden they're in Steeler territory on the 43.
Yeah, I think caught Troy up at that time. Gay was trailing him coming across the zone there. I have him listed as a guy in coverage there. And yeah, 27 yards, bam, six more yards after the catch on a 27-yard play. And that really gave them life there on that drive.
And then all sorts of kind of weird things in the next couple of plays. Adai goes, you know, they get another pass completion to Garcon, and then Adai goes for 11 yards right through the defense, which, you know, with 3 minutes to go on your own 25, you sure as hell don't expect that. And then after they get a short play, so they have a third and two at the Steelers six, and again you don't expect them to get beat on the run, and Troy basically could take the handoff here. And we saw it earlier in the game. Troy's in there in the backfield, has to make a decision, running back, quarterback, and the running back picked him off as the quarterback held the ball, but he had timed it just perfectly. And this play, after a play or two before just missing Painter's hand for another strip sack when he was cocking his arm to throw, Troy's in there. And again, he's got to make a decision, running back, quarterback, and unfortunately on this one, he just guessed wrong on third and two. Probably, I think he probably did the right thing going with the quarterback because he's going to bury him. But they just hand the ball off to Adai, and he scrambles through, and I'm still not sure he got in, but gave him 6 yards for a touchdown, and all of a sudden, it's a tie game.
Yeah, but how lucky were they at that point maybe that they did get in on that play?
Well, right. You mean running the clock down and not having any time left.
Right. You know, it's actually probably worked in their favor that they went ahead and scored because, you know, at that time, you know, it's a 20-20. They were down a touchdown at that point.
Yeah.
But you know, you got to think that the way they're running the ball, they're going to get it in. I don't know. You know, there's the age-old saying you just got to score when you can score.
Right.
You know, especially down by seven. But, you know, maybe the Steelers did catch a little bit of break that had left them a lot of time still on the clock there, you know, 2 minutes or so, I guess. So, but, yeah, Troy almost took the handoff there. And, you know, it's hard to, you know, to second guess who to take there, but it looked like he could have had almost both of them there if he wanted to. But one of those things that happened, the guys have got to be behind him. I think they were watching in awe, a little bit of flat-footed, thought Troy had it covered there, and then, you know, Adai just breaks off left tackle and scores.
Yep. And then Ben does what he does best, takes him down the field. You commented on this, and I think it's. I don't think we need to read more into it than necessary. But very interesting to see Mowaldi Moore, the guy on the field for this drive.
Yeah, funny how nobody wants to talk about this drive, though. You know, that's what gets me. You know, you take this thing 80 yards, or 60 yards, I should say. I think they got it at
the 20. Yep, yeah. 20 to 20.
But you know, nobody wants to talk about what a good drive this was, you know, to actually win the game.
And really nice play by Mowaldi Moore on the sideline, faking going out of bounds, beats the guy at pass catch and run for 22 yards.
Yeah. And people ask, you know, what Mowaldi's doing in the game. Well, that's their 2 minute offense. That shouldn't be that surprising there that he was in the game and he does what he's done his whole career. Even with the Steelers is he makes the key plays at the key time. And he certainly did on that drive and he looked good. A few, I think he had a rush or two up the middle on the drive as well. And I thought they looked good. And on this same drive too, you got to remember early in the drive is when Jonathan Scott was injured. So at that time you have Marcus Gilbert coming back in and it had to be because the side of the shoulder that was hurt on him, he ends up going in at left tackle at that time. And actually, you know, did a yeoman's job, I guess, as much as compared to the rest of the night there. But yeah, they drove all the way down there. They took the final one. Roethlisberger kind of goes to the center of the field there to give us, you know, Sushi a good shot there. And, you know, Sushi buries a 38-yard field goal, in essence, to win the game. So funny how nobody talks about that last drive, though.
Yeah, I'm with you. A nice drive. Ben did some good stuff, scrambled for 11 yards on one play, hit the open guys, and yeah, they did a good job. And at the end of the day, the offense, as we said at the beginning, look, there are some issues with the run game. I'm not sure the issues are with Rashard. It's clearly the offensive line is the issue. I'm a little surprised Isaac Redmond didn't get some more playing time. He had one carry there at the end of the game. you know, for field position, protect the ball, but he only had 3 carries in total for 6 yards. Didn't see much of him. But like I said, he got all the offensive weapons involved. All the receivers, you know, had multiple catches, actually. And Ben completed passes to 9 different guys over the course of the game, Wallace and Miller being the high guys at 5, and Mweldy, David Johnson, and Wes Saunders all getting 1. So, you know, pretty good stuff. I guess the key point to remember here is a 23-20 win where the Steelers turned it over 3 times and only got 1 back. So the 2 defensive touchdowns, you know, kind of canceled each other out. But you don't win many games where you turn it over 2 more times than your opponent. And, you know, they did.
And a credit to the defense for stopping them on the short field. That was probably the difference of the game. You know, one thing that stuck out, Dave, at me when I've already gone through it, I think 2 times now, is you saw a lot of 2 personnel this time around where they used Heath Miller and Wesley Saunders as the 2 tight ends in the game a lot. You know, normally when Wesley has been playing up until this point, he's been in on the 3 tight end sets. Now they're going to some sets where – you know, no running back, sort of an empty backfield, 2 tight end, 3 wide receiver set there. And that's something we haven't seen before. The only downside of this is if you don't get any pass protection there, you're never going to be able to utilize and run some of the stuff like the Patriots like to do that we've talked about in the past podcast. But I thought that was interesting there. Back to the Redmond thing, yeah, I thought they could have used him more. I was expecting him to eat into the carries a little bit more. Would it have made a difference, though, overall? You know, I don't know. I'll throw this to you, but I don't think it would have. I mean, there just was no running lanes for the most part on the day. Maybe Isaac Redmond gets you some extra yards the way he runs, but I don't think that's a difference in the game as far as the running attack went.
No, I don't either, and don't mean to suggest that, although I think Ed Bouchette wrote about it today. I do think there's a little bit of a question on Mendenhall hitting holes explosively. I think there are times when I think he tries to pick and dance a little bit that he didn't hit the hole. But I think we generally agree there weren't a ton of holes there. And some of this we've disparaged some of the Steelers' opponents, and I think rightly so off Indy's first 2 games. And as much as anybody, their beat writer gave them a pretty good beating. But you've got to give the Colts defense, particularly their front 7, some props. We knew about the 2 guys at the end, but these guys did a much better job against the run than any of us anticipated.
Yeah, they did. I thought, people are going to get on the play calling, of course, and all like that. But look, there was just nowhere to run. You know, it boils down to execution in this game, and the Steelers weren't executing on the offensive line. The tight ends, we covered that. They weren't blocking terribly well. Sanders and Hines Ward, I mentioned, they weren't blocking well out on the edges the few times that they needed to do. You've got to be able to run the ball. I thought they showed pretty good balance. I thought they tried to run the ball. I thought they stayed committed as best they could to running the ball, but it just wasn't there. And thank God for Ben being able to extend plays the way he does, because, you know, the pass protection was just pitiful. Let's face it, especially on that left side. You know, I ask you, what do you do now? Let's say Jonathan Scott is, let's say he's out for 2 games, maybe more, with a high ankle sprain, if that indeed is the case. You know, how do you reshuffle this?
It's a great question. I will be we will both be interested spectators, I'm sure. I guess the first thought in my mind is, you know, who is more capable at left tackle today, Trey Essex or Marcus Gilbert? That's the first thing that comes to mind. You and I have kind of said Chris Scott is not going to be the guy. I can't imagine that he gets a crack at this spot. Do you think?
No, there's no way you can let this guy play left tackle. You would be hopeful that he could play right tackle at this point. I think you do have to think about shift if Gilbert is healthy, which it seems like he is. God help us that he is. I think if Gilbert can play next week, you move him over to left tackle. Okay, this is where the guy's going to end up anyway, and was going to end up anyway as this season progresses. I thought he played well again at right tackle. You know, I don't think a lot of the stuff outside that one sack, which we talked about earlier, You know, I think this is a guy that you moved to left tackle now. Now the question is, what do you do at right tackle? I think you probably go with Trey Essex unless you're able to get Flo Zell back on the phone and in there. And I just think Flo Zell's asking price is going to be too high. That would be the best case scenarios if you get Flo Zell back in there. But even then, you're going to be in a situation where Flo Zell's going to miss snaps throughout the year. You don't know how much how this guy's kept in shape over the since the first day or two of training camp. And nobody's looked at him either. You know, maybe you do. You know, Kugler brought in Jamon Meredith over from his time with Buffalo. Maybe you give this guy a crack at right tackle. But you know, boy, we're really starting to see how big that injury to Willie Colon is hurting us now, because this guy is an excellent run blocker and pass blocker. You know, he was the Steelers' number one lineman, I thought, before he went down. And it's really taken its toll. So, you know, if you don't go outside, you've got that Travis Turner down there, I believe, on the practice squad. Jury's still out on him, of course. I don't think he's ready. He might get a call up now for them needing bodies, but I'm willing to bet they keep this in-house, David. I'd be surprised at this point if they sign anybody else.
Yeah, it's interesting news today that came out. Max Starts is visiting the Vikings today up in Minnesota. I think there's zero chance Flo Zell, just getting him in shape and, you know, the susceptibility to injury. And the salary cap issues. I don't see it happening, so I'm with you. They stay inside. It's worth noting, the Steelers generally, since they've instituted this 17-week schedule, the Steelers generally have had their bye early in the schedule. Between weeks 4 and 7, I'd like to think, historically. This year, it comes very late, and you would think that teams would generally like to have it later, because after you've played more games, the rest week is probably more needed. This is one of those times where maybe you wish it were week 4, so you could figure out what's going on with your linemen and where you're going to find your solutions. Because right now, everybody pointed at two things coming into the season: corner and offensive line. And I don't think either of those problems have been solved in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I think they're hanging on at corner. I think that's the lesser of the two evils right now. But remember, we talked about a few podcasts before. Oh, wow, we're so much happier that you have a later bye this year, because that's about the time that we thought that we would need it. You know, but a couple of injuries, a couple of, you know, piss poor performances through three games, and we're back to thinking, boy, we could use the bye
just for the reps, you know, get the reps.
Yeah, just to get the reps, get some continuity at this offensive line. Because let's see, I mean, Colon started week 1 at right tackle. Week 2, you saw Foster at left guard, so there's a different lineup there. Yep. This week you have
Gilbert at right tackle.
Yeah, Gilbert at right tackle. And then you have the merry-go-round again. So, you know, you've started really three different combinations on this line, and none of them have looked fabulous. Even though last week was okay, they still didn't run the ball fantastic. And this week, you know, everything was bad as far as the offensive line. So I would be surprised if they went outside, like I said. But, you know, stranger things have happened. I just don't know where they're going to get the money from to do it.
Yep. Well, one other thing is, as we wrap things up here, I think although Sushi missed a field goal, I think one thing the Steelers have to feel very good about is their special teams. Sepulveda has been good. He had 3 punts yesterday. 2 of them were in short fields. The one longer one he had was a good punt. He's been rock solid, as he was all through preseason and the first 2 games. Antonio Brown is really dangerous in the return game. Probably the best returner we've had in the last, you know, as far back as I can remember, I'd say 30 years at least. We did have that kid who went to the Lions, Stephon Logan joystick. Yeah, he was not very good in the punt game, but good on kickoff returns. But Antonio Brown's a whole new dimension. The coverage has generally been good on those units. There was a couple of kick returns that probably came out a little further than you might like, but
Sushi made a tackle.
He did make a tackle. It was good of him to stand up there on the 28-yard line and stick his head in there, and it was good to see him get up too.
Exactly. Maybe Sepulveda's giving him some tips and all like that, but but yeah, that, you know, hey, they haven't brought one back. It hasn't really been a huge turning point in any of the games thus far, and you know, if you can point to that alone, I would say it's a success. And as you mentioned earlier, Antonio Brown. Boy, this kid is doing it all.
Yep. So the Steelers are going to have their hands full next week. They're playing a team that is explosive offensively. You know, the Saints put up 40 points on them, but it feels to me like the Saints can put up 40 points on anybody at any time. So I'll reserve some judgment on the Texans defense. But the Steelers are going to go down there. I'm pretty sure the Steelers aren't going to be favored. I haven't looked at the lines yet, but they're going to go down to Texas, and there's a good chance that there is a chance that they come back for week five, looking at a 2-2 record.
Yeah, I think I had heard early line on this, only 2.5 or something like that. That's got to be wrong because you would think that the Texans would be favored much, much more than that. But
I was thinking 3 or 4. I don't see them giving the Steelers 6 points.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, let's face it, that was an entertaining game yesterday between – the Saints in Houston there. I mean, that thing went back and forth. And I don't know. The Texans can score, man. I guess it's just going to be one of those games where you have to, you know, just go neck and neck with them. The only bad thing about it is on their defensive side of the ball, boy, that that Watt kid and Mario Williams, man. Wade, say what you will about Wade Phillips, but that guy can institute a defense in a heartbeat and you know, get after the quarterback. And you know, these guys, their ends might not be as athletic as Freeney and Mathis, but they're strong and powerful, and they can get after it. I mean, it's almost like playing a carbon copy of what our guys have to go, you know, against in practice every day. Right now, I mean, you know me, David. I'm usually a glass half full type guy and optimistic. If they don't get this line squared away soon, this could be a loss up on the board, and we'll see how things progress from here. But going on a road, all beat up against a team that can really move the ball on offense and gets after the quarterback on defense, it certainly don't look good from this far out right now.
Yep, I'm with you. All right, anything you want to close with? What's your articles should people expect to see in the next day or two?
They're going to be all over the board. I've already got my coverage stats up today. Get to work on the offensive line breakdown, which, I mean, I could save you all a lot of problems and trouble right now myself too, just give everybody an F. But I want to see who actually might have had a few good plays in there as well. We'll have some other stats up as usual and some commentary. We hope to have a Texans beat writer on perhaps on our Wednesday podcast.
Yep.
As well, so we're checking into that. So as always, send us some questions, comments, follow both of us on Twitter. I'm at Steelers Depot on Twitter. You're at Hammer Speaks on Twitter. You can follow the Terrible Podcast at Terrible Podcast and email the show as well, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. but other than that, hey, we got a W, we got out of Indy with a win, as Tom put it, an AFC win. So let's take that and run with it for right now.
Yep, and we'll come back Wednesday. We'll take a look around the league. You know, early in the season here, a lot of Steelers stuff to focus on. But Wednesday is when we preview the other opponent. We'll take a look at what's been going on in the division and some of the games yesterday, some really entertaining games. That Saints-Texans game, obviously the Patriots-Bills game, and a few others. And we'll talk about some injuries and things that are going on in that world as well. So thanks for listening, as always. This has been The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 21.